Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents How to Kiss Your Best Friend, a Sweet Romantic Comedy, by Jenny Proctor. Narrated by Philip Alces and Lydia Dornay. Chapter 1. Brody. I stare at my phone like it's about to sprout legs out of the speaker port and dance across the coffee table. Kate Fletcher sent me a text. Today. 5 minutes ago, and I have no idea how to respond. Look, I realize better than anyone that pining after my childhood best friend is a dangerous game. I have 3 brothers, and they have reminded me more times than I can count, and that's saying something because I am very good with numbers, that I am only setting myself up for heartbreak. They say if anything were going to happen with Kate, it would have by now. Logically, I get that. I understand we aren't ever going to be together. But I can't let her go completely. Kate is my favorite bad habit, the impossible wish, the dream I can't shake. It's been 1,433 days since we last had a conversation. That streak ended today. At least, it will once I respond. I stand up and start pacing, my fingers tapping against my leg. There are so many things I want to ask her. But I can't launch into an inquisition when all she said was hello. She's the one who reached out to me. I'm a mature adult, and a mature adult would say hello back and let her make the next move. I am 17 laps into my pacing when my oldest brother, Perry, knocks twice before pushing into my house, a backpack slung over his shoulder. You do not look ready to go. I pause next to the fireplace halfway through lap 18.
I'm close.
Right, yeah. Looks like it. Perry surveys the room and sighs, but he's overreacting. My living room may look like an outdoor outfitter threw up all over my furniture, but I know where everything is, and I know exactly where it's going to go when I stash it all in my pack. I'm only waiting to finish packing because I just cleaned my tent, and it's still in the backyard drying off. And also because Kate Fletcher just sent me a text message.
What's up with you?
Perry asks as he discards his pack and drops into the chair by the window.
You look all weird and stressed and stuff.
He pulls out his phone and reclines into the chair like he expects to be waiting a while.
I just got a weird text, and it threw me off.
Aw, did Taylor Swift finally respond to all the messages you've sent her fan club?
I grab the bundled merino wool socks sitting on the arm of the couch and chuck them at his head. He deflects the socks without even cracking a smile.
Honestly, hearing directly from Taylor Swift herself would be less surprising.
Perry looks up, his expression morphing into actual concern.
I got a message from Kate, I say.
His eyes go wide.
High school Kate? Your Kate?
I nod and lean forward, resting my head in my hands.
What did she say?
Nothing. She said hi. Said it's been a while. The thing is, I do not hold Kate accountable for our friendship falling apart. We did a decent job of staying in touch after graduation, even though I headed to college, and she headed to Europe to live with her dad full time. We saw each other once or twice a year, whenever she was back in the States, and we texted regularly. Until we didn't anymore. It didn't make me mad, it just made me worried about her. My brothers, on the other hand, were thrilled when Kate dropped out of my life.
Now you can move on, they said. Now you can stop waiting for something that's never going to happen.
I know that at some point I'm going to have to take dating other women more seriously. I'm 28 years old. I don't really want to spend the rest of my life reading Kate's articles. She's a travel writer, and stalking her Instagram feed. I know precisely how pathetic that makes me look. Don't get me wrong, I date. Just not seriously. A 3-month relationship here, a 6-month relationship there. I even made it a year with a woman named Jill my senior year of college. But nothing ever sticks. Because somewhere in the back of my mind, I can't let go of the hope that at some point Kate will come back into my life, and this time things will be different.
It's been a while, Perry repeats. How kind of her to acknowledge.
Don't do that, I say. You can't play it both ways. You were pissed at her when we were still in touch. Now you're pissed at her because we fell out of touch?
I'm not pissed at her, he says. I just don't like what she does to your head. She's been messing with you for a lot of years, Brody. I push a hand through my hair. But that's on me. She didn't do anything on purpose. I can't blame her for what she doesn't feel. Perry lifts a shoulder in the sardonic way that makes my oldest brother so annoying. I won't argue with you about it, but I think you're being generous by saying she's never strung you along on purpose.
Strung me? Jeez, Perry, do you even know what a real friendship looks like?
He looks at me over the top of his phone. I don't need friends, he says dryly. It's bad enough I have so many siblings. Friends and all their neediness would make my life even more unbearable than it already is. It's arguable that the last 4 years of Perry's life have been hard enough to justify his attitude. An ugly divorce, settled in court that nearly cleaned him out, then all the stuff we've dealt with at home. Dad had a stroke and was forced to retire early, leaving Perry to step up and take over daily operations of Stonebrook Farm, the working farm and event center that's been the family business for almost 30 years. As soon as our only sister Olivia finished her MBA, she moved home to help out, but Perry is still juggling a lot. All that aside, Perry has never been particularly jovial. Happy isn't the right word. I've seen him happy. He just doesn't smile much. He's Roy Kent minus the swear words, Stanley Hudson minus the indifference, Dr. House minus the cutting insults. He perpetually looks like he's carrying the weight of the world, or at least our family, on his shoulders. Your life isn't unbearable, I say. And you aren't in love with Kate, he responds without missing a beat. His eyes are back on his phone now. See, saying something out loud doesn't necessarily make it true.
I'm not in love with Kate.
I say it mostly out of habit, like it's an affirmation I'm trying to will into existence. I don't love her because I can't love her, because it's fruitless to love her. Right. Sure. Should I get Lennox on the phone so he can jog your memory? I bet Flint remembers that night out at the ledge. Should I call him up too? Perry is playing dirty. I shouldn't be held accountable for things I said nearly 9 years ago, the one time in my entire existence I allowed myself to get completely wasted. I was with my brothers, up behind the orchards on our family's property, on a cliffside we brothers dubbed the ledge. It isn't truly a cliff. Had one of us ever fallen, we wouldn't have done more than tumble a few yards into a grove of rhododendrons. But it still provided great views of the valley, was a short hike from the house, and an even shorter one if we took one of the gators, the 4x4s we used to get around the farm, to the orchard edge. From the time we were old enough to brave the shadowy western North Carolina woods alone, the ledge was our escape whenever we were mad, sad, angry, or in trouble. It was also where we took dates when we wanted to impress them with the view and make out without the risk of our parents catching us. That night, 9 years ago, all four Hawthorne brothers were on the ledge together, beverages provided by the two oldest. Perry and Lennox wore their older age like a badge of manhood. Me and Flint, the brother younger than me, were still aspiring to. I was exhausted after finishing freshman year finals and bemoaning the fact that my high school best friend had gone off and started traveling the world with some guy. Preston was her long-distance boyfriend all through our junior and senior year, so I shouldn't have been surprised. But traveling together, visiting far-off countries, staying in Preston's family villas and seaside condominiums, it felt so permanent, so adult. I don't remember much of what I said out on the ledge that night, but my brothers seemed to remember every last word of my miserable tale of unrequited love. They must, because even 9 years later they remind me of it every chance they get. They also remind me that, with tears streaming down my face, I poetically claimed I'd been in love with two women in my 19 years of existence, Kate Fletcher and Taylor Swift.
Are you going to respond? Perry asks.
Sure, eventually. I just have to figure out how. Perry breathes out a heavy sigh.
Brody, how many minutes have you been staring at your phone?
The number pops into my head as quickly as they always do. 17 and a half.
You gotta snap out of it, man. Finish packing. Tyler will be here soon. You can respond in the car.
I nod,
Knowing Perry is right, I've wasted too much time as it is. It was a last-minute decision to join Perry on his annual 2-week trek on the Appalachian Trail. We're all big hikers, my entire family, but Perry is the only one into the long-distance stuff. He says he'll through-hike it one day, tackle the entire 2,190 miles in one uninterrupted trip, but I'll believe it when I see it. He likes working too much to take 6 months off to go hiking. I hesitated to take even 2 weeks off, but after the volatility that dominated the last month of the school year, I need the break, even if it means hanging out with Perry. I stand and start gathering my gear from various places around the living room.
Did you read Kate's last piece in The Atlantic?
Perry is behind me now, rummaging around in my kitchen.
On the impacts of tourism on the Maasai tribe in Zimbabwe? It's brilliant.
I stop and stare at my oldest brother. It does not surprise me that after all the traveling she's done, Kate has turned herself into an accomplished travel writer. It does surprise me Perry reads her stuff.
You read Kate's articles?
Perry walks back into the living room with a to-go container of leftover chicken fried rice in his hand.
Not as a rule, but I read The Atlantic. If she's in it, then I read it.
I, on the other hand, read everything Kate writes, and buy hard copies, whenever there is one, for safekeeping.
Yeah, I read that one too,
I say noncommittally. Perry takes a bite of the rice and winces.
How old is this? The rice is crunchy.
Old? Why are you eating that for breakfast?
Why didn't you throw it out?
He frowns but doesn't stop eating.
Does it ever seem weird that you know so much more about Kate's life and what she's up to than she does about you?
He nudges the socks I threw earlier with the toe of his shoe.
Don't forget these.
I grab the socks and add them to my pile of gear, then move toward the back door to retrieve my tent.
I don't know. She lives a pretty public life. I only know the stuff everyone else knows, too.
At least that's how it's been the past 4 years. I used to know everything. I disappear into my backyard long enough to collapse my tent and fold it up. Back inside, I put it and the rest of my remaining gear into my bag.
Kate might know some stuff. I don't post anything, but Olivia does. I'm pretty sure they still follow each other.
Olivia's feed wouldn't tell Kate anything but how much Olivia loves the farm. And Tyler.
True.
I glance at my watch.
Speaking of Tyler, shouldn't he be here by now?
He's coming, Perry says. He had to help Mom with something in the goat barn, but he said he'd be here by 9:30. I swear, she likes him better than the rest of us.
Olivia's husband, Tyler, who will drop us off at Springer Mountain, the southern terminus of the Appalachian Trail, made fast work of convincing Mom he was her favorite.
Only because he loves her goats, Perry says grouchily.
And helped make her a grandbaby.
It's not lost on any of us that the youngest of the 5 Hawthorne children, and the only girl, managed to find a husband and get pregnant before any of her older brothers have even come close. With the way things are looking, Olivia's baby, due at the end of the summer, may be the only grandchild Mom and Dad get. Perry swore off women after his divorce, and despite our best efforts to resuscitate whatever part of his brain controls desire, he's still uninterested. A vegetarian in the meat aisle of the grocery store. Lennox, the next brother down, has the opposite problem. He desires too much. His problem isn't finding a woman, it's wanting to settle down with only one. The brother right under me, Flint, has an acting career that isn't exactly conducive to normal relationships. Last time I saw his face, it was plastered to the front of one of my AP chemistry students' notebooks. A cutout of the photo that made the cover of People magazine's latest Sexiest Man Alive edition. If it isn't yet obvious, I'm the only Hawthorne brother who's even remotely normal, at least when it comes to relationship stuff. I'd love to get married, settle down, have kids, be the son who takes the kids over to have dinner with their grandparents every Sunday afternoon. It's what I want. I just need to meet the right woman. My eyes dart to where my phone is still sitting in the center of the coffee table. Step one, convince myself Kate is not the right woman. I'll get right on that. Make it my top priority.
just as soon as I respond to her text.
Chapter 2. Brody. I was 9 years old when Catherine Ann Fletcher, Kate, climbed onto the school bus just after the 3 o'clock bell, looked at the empty seat beside me, and said, "If I sit here, will you promise not to be stupid?" She dropped onto the narrow bench, nudging me over with her hip, and pulled her over-large backpack onto her lap. Her hair was long and dark, hanging over her shoulders in a thick braid, and her face was covered in freckles. We didn't get new kids in Silver Creek very often. It's too small a town for people to move in with any regularity, so everyone on the bus was sitting up and taking notice of the new girl, and the nerdy kid she'd chosen to sit beside. As for me, I couldn't even manage a word. I just sniffed and pushed my glasses up from where they'd slipped onto the end of my nose.
"The thing is," she continued, "experience has taught me that most boys are dumb with a capital D."
She eyed me, her gaze shrewd.
"I watched you when you got off the bus this morning. You're nicer to your sister than the other one."
I looked toward the seat directly in front of me, where my younger brother Flint and our little sister Olivia were sitting together. Our two older brothers were already at the middle school and rode a different bus. Kate was observant. Flint was always tougher on Olivia, but Olivia was tougher on him, too. I lifted a shoulder.
"I'm older," I said,
like that explained everything.
She shook her head dismissively. "Some kids use that as a reason to be meaner. Are you good at math? I'm terrible at it, so it would be excellent if you are."
Was I good at math? Even with my limited experience, I understood that I was being interviewed. Kate Fletcher was deciding if I was friend material or not. And that question? It was a winning lottery ticket. I wasn't just good at math. I was a genius at math. The kind of next-level nerd who tested out of every math class our elementary school offered by the middle of my fourth-grade year. The kid who 2 years later would go on to the Ellen DeGeneres show as a 12-year-old human calculator.
"Did you just ask if he's good at math?"
Flint said, turning around in his seat so he could look over the back. He was a faithful and competent wingman even back then.
"He's the best there is at math. Give him a math problem, any math problem. Something with a billion numbers in it."
Flint tapped the side of his temple.
"He can do it in his head."
It was a slight overstatement. There were limits to what I was capable of computing in my head, but I usually did all right when it was kids coming up with the problems.
"Really?"
Kate asked, her eyebrows arching high on her forehead. I shrugged noncommittally, even as my heart started racing and a thin sheen of sweat broke out across the back of my neck.
"Sure. Any math problem?"
I nodded.
245,550 divided by 25.
"Piece of cake,"
Flint muttered under his breath. "He can always do the ones with fives." Olivia was watching now, too, her eyes hopeful as her gaze darted from me to Kate and back again. She seemed to sense the gravity of the moment just like I did. The answer tumbled into my brain with measured certainty. I can't explain how it all works, though as an adult, it's easier to recognize the patterns that back then just felt like magic.
9,822,
I said.
It's been 18 years. And I still remember how her eyes lit up when she checked my answer with a calculator she pulled out of her backpack. Our friendship was a done deal after that. Kate decided we would be best friends. A very Kate move, I recognize in hindsight more than I did at the time. And we were. But now, I don't know what to call what we are now. We aren't estranged exactly, but we aren't talking either. At least we haven't been. Until today.
Kate.
Hi, Brody. It's been a while.
I don't need to have my phone in front of me to see her text. The words are floating in my mind's eye, even as I move around the room and pack up the last of my gear. I force myself to focus, mentally cataloging all the items in my bag, double and triple checking that I've remembered everything. Perry's list was comprehensive. The only thing I adjusted was how much water he suggested I bring. His estimates shorted me 16 ounces.
"You've got all your food packed?" Perry says, eyeing my bag. "Everything I suggested?"
I nod.
We'll be on the trail 3 days before we can resupply, so we'll be carrying everything we'll need to eat until then. I've got everything, plus a little extra water, which you're going to need, too. How heavy is your pack?
Brody? Perry levels me with a glare. If you run the calculations for how much water I'm going to need one more time, I'm going to tell Dad about the time you stole the gator and drove it to Kate's in the middle of the night. He never did figure out who caused all 4 tires to go flat. I bet he'd like to know.
My words stop, even if the numbers keep moving through my head. Exactly how much water we'll need on the trail depends on a lot of factors. How fast we're walking, how hot it is outside, our body weight relative to how much weight we're carrying, the distance we have to travel before we can resupply or find potable water on the trail. Perry ought to be glad I can run the calculations in my head. Dehydration is a big problem for long-distance hikers.
Stop it, Perry says.
Stop what? I say as I shoulder my pack.
Stop calculating.
Perry grabs his own bag and follows me to the front porch. I'm not calculating anything.
Yes, you are. Your eyes are doing that thing where they dart around.
I promise, we'll be fine. There's water all over the trail. We will be fine. I know this. People hike the Appalachian Trail every summer without coming close to the kinds of ridiculous calculations that keep my brain occupied. Best guesses, rough estimates, those are good enough. Especially when there are so many unexpected variables with long-distance hiking that can't be calculated. That doesn't mean I won't be doing the math anyway. Sometimes I forget that constant number crunching isn't normal, that all drivers aren't calculating exactly when they'll reach their destination based on slight fluctuations in their speed, that people on walks aren't estimating the number of steps they'll take before they reach some landmark in the distance. But it's how my brain works. It's actually why I decided to teach chemistry instead of math. There are still a lot of numbers in chemistry, but the science part gives my brain a break from the constant calculating. Tyler pulls up minutes later, and we load up our gear. I take a deep breath and climb into the back seat of Tyler's SUV, content to let Perry take the front. I need this trip. The decompression. The time in the mountains. The time away. I settle into my seat and tap my cell phone into my palm. We won't be without service while we're hiking, and I've got a solar charger in my pack, but coverage will be spotty in places. If responding to Kate starts a conversation, I'd rather have it now when I've got hours to kill in the car than later when I'm on the trail and Perry is watching my every move. But what do I say? And how do I say it? No exclamation points. That's important. I want to seem chill, not overly exuberant. The fact that it's already been an hour since she first texted is a good thing. I won't seem overeager. And now I sound as bad as the girls in my freshman environmental science class, stressing about how long they can leave guys on red without responding. I have to just do it. Respond. Adult this situation once and for all. I pull up my texting app, but a new message pops up before I make it to Kate's thread. This one from Monica, a fellow teacher at Green River Academy, and the woman I sort of dated a few months back. I may or may not appreciate the delay, even if it is caused by Monica. Monica. Hey, wasn't sure you'd check your email before leaving. Confirmation just came through that the next school board meeting is delayed until you're back in town. I'm glad they're seeing the benefit of having you there to defend the program. In the meantime, enjoy your trip. I close out the text thread and pull up my Green River Academy email. Sure enough, there's the form email addressed to the entire district pushing back the date of the next school board meeting, plus a separate message addressed only to me. It's brief, relaying what Monica has already told me. Brody, the school board agreed you deserve the opportunity to speak for the program. I can't make any promises, but we'll give it our best shot. John. It's more encouragement than I've gotten from John Talbot, Green River Academy's principal, in weeks, so I'll take it. Green River Academy is a charter high school focused on integrating experiential outdoor learning with regular classroom experiences. When they hired me to teach chemistry and environmental science, they already had enrichment programs that covered rock climbing, backpacking, horseback riding, and swimming. What they didn't have weirdly, because the academy sits less than a mile from the Green River, was whitewater kayaking. It took a little bit of maneuvering. Okay, a lot of maneuvering. I wrote grant proposals, begged for donations and support from local businesses, completed layers and layers of safety certifications. All total, it took 13 months for me to get the Green River Academy whitewater kayaking program officially off the ground. The first year, 6 kids enrolled, which was good because I'd only managed to acquire 7 kayaks. 5 years later, the program is maxed out at 25 high school students, with another 20 on a waiting list. And now the whole thing is under attack. I force my jaw to unclench and take a long, slow breath. The whole point of this trip is to get away from the stress of all this. Another text from Monica pops up. Monica: would love to get together as soon as you're back in town. Without the teacher's lounge, I'm going to miss you. She ends the message with a kissing emoji that makes me roll my eyes. Monica is very nice, but she's also not taking the hint. And by hint, I mean a very specific conversation in which I told her I'm not attracted to her and only want us to be friends. I don't know how I could possibly be more clear. Monica started working at the academy 2 years after I did, and since we sort of knew each other in high school, she glommed on quick, using me as her go-to guy for questions about the school. Everything from teacher's lounge politics to what cafeteria meals ought to be avoided. I never minded her questions that first year. She's a genuinely good person, great even. That doesn't mean I feel any spark when I'm around her. I can almost hear Perry's voice in my head.
You'll never feel a spark with someone new until you get Kate out of your head.
Getting Kate out of my head might be easier if I didn't still live in Silver Creek. Reminders of her are everywhere. All over my parents' farm, in all the places we used to hang out. Every square inch of this place holds a memory with Kate in it. Still, even if there is truth in what Perry is saying, that isn't what's happening with Monica. There's just nothing there. I type out a quick response to her first text. Brody: thanks for the heads up about the school board meeting. I completely ignore her second one. I've already said everything I could possibly say on the subject. I switch over my messages to Kate, my heart rate climbing. There's absolutely no reason for me to freak out. I have no idea what triggered her message, but it's probably something inconsequential. I have a long history of trying to turn things Kate says or does into more than they are, but I'm too old to do that now. I finally type out a response, as friendly and generic as her message was, and send it before I can spend even one extra second thinking about it. Brody: hey, nice to hear from you. How are you? Her response pops up almost immediately, like she was waiting for me to respond. Kate: a simple question with a complicated answer. I'm okay, I think, but I'm coming home. I'd love to see you. The words hit like a punch to the gut. She's coming home. To Silver Creek. Weird to hear her call it home, because she's done pretty well at staying away. She's passed through a few times, but she never stays long enough to even unpack. She used to joke about how different we were when it came to our life plans. How I was the guy who would never leave Silver Creek, the guy who would always play it safe and stay close to home, while she dreamed of traveling to every country on the map. I wouldn't exactly call whitewater rafting the Class 5 rapids in the Green River Narrows playing it safe, but still, she wasn't wrong. I was the guy who came back to Silver Creek the minute I graduated college. When I landed a job at the academy, it felt like hitting the jackpot. I've never wanted to live anywhere else. Meanwhile, she's got more stamps in her passport at 28 than most people have in a lifetime. I key out my response, trying my best to keep things neutral. Brody: that's crazy. It's been a long time. Again, her response comes through lightning fast. Kate: it has been a long time. I know I owe you an apology, Brody, but I want to do it in person. There's so much to explain. Relief washes over me. I don't know her reasons for going dark, but I know her well enough to trust that she has a good one. Brody: you don't owe me anything. How long are you in town?
Kate. I don't know, act.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?